Playoffs? Don't talk about it. Playoffs? You kidding me? Playoffs?
Yeah, NBA Australia, how are you going? How are you going? I hope you're all right. You bloody well better be, because it is Friday, April 19, 2GIF, am I right? I would hate to be a tin in about 25 minutes, just saying. I'm your host, James Clements. I'm a guy that you can see, hosting the official AFL Supercoach podcast, the AFL Today Show, Fox Sports Lab NBA, all the good stuff. I'll tell you what, I'm here back in Larry Armour Studios, the comforting surrounds, I tell you, of the NBA Australia Studios. Talking all things playoffs. That's right. We've got a whole bunch of previews for you today. We've got a bit of news, but then it's just a lot of previews because God damn it, the playoffs are here and I cannot wait. We've got playoff series and previews and picks and all the good stuff. We've also got those two 8-seed play-in games on Saturday morning. So that'll be fun. And then that'll basically be it. We'll go through each of the playoff series, give a winner, pick all the games as well for the weekend too. And because we're back in the NBA Australia studio, we'll do a magic tweet of the day and we'll do Dickhead of the Week because it is Friday. So that'll be fun. We'll pick and preview all the games over the weekend too that we know the odds for, or at least the matchups for, because obviously the 1-8 series are not yet set. So without further ado, let's get into it. Episode 1078, I believe, of NBA Australia. What's that? Let's go!
G'day, this is Andrew Gaze, and you're listening and watching NBA Australia.
Watch out for the Shaq attack!
Ah, you better. Tell you what, better watch out for the Sprite vending machine attack as well. It was good old, was it Hoops Nostalgia? Is that Adam Ryan? I don't know. Posting the Grant Hill Sprite machine, and I'll tell you what, nothing makes me happier than just remembering the Grant Hill drink Sprite.
Man, that's Grant Hill. Grant Hill. Grant Hill drink Sprite?
Grant Hill drink Sprite.
Oh, yeah. There was a Tim Duncan one as well, which is pretty gnarly. I'm like, how much money do I have on hand right now, and can I buy these machines and put them in the studio? There is not enough room for the machines, but it would be absolutely gnarly. Let's go. Anyway, let's start today's show the way we start every show here in NBA Australia with usually, I don't know, what do you call it, Jim? Is it a bit of a whip around? Oh, yeah, a whip. Say whip again. Whip. Cool whip. The daily whip around today, we've got some news. Usually it's just me whinging about the kids. And that's no different from today, you know. Squid number two, just sick. So at home all day, just grizzly guts, just having a sook the entire time. And then just feel bad because you're like, you're not feeling great and it's annoying me. But it also just sucks because you just don't want to see him sad. Anyway, let's start today's show with the Daily Whip Around. Jimmy Butler, we've got some big injury news, obviously. Jimmy Butts, MCL, they've kind of gone, oh, it's definitely something to do with his knee. Something to do with the MCL. He's out a couple of weeks, and you're like, oh, God. Tricky one. So Miami, at least without Jimmy Butler, haven't been too bad this year. At the same time, it feels like you don't want to play a game without your dude. They're 13-9 without him this season. But still, it stinks. It stinks because, look, Miami-Chicago, I'd rather see a full-strength Miami have a crack at Boston than like this horrible, horrible Chicago team that's going to get absolutely steamrolled. But here we are. Jimmy Butler, so you might remember at the end of that first quarter yesterday, Kelly Oubre goes up and tries to, like, I don't know, block his shot kind of, but then just jumps on Jimmy Butler. And they sort of knocks his knee as he's sort of going down. And yeah, not great. The craziest part is Jimmy Butler is such a hard MFer that he played out the rest of the game with what could be an MCL tear. That is chaos. So at least a few weeks, Miami like, yeah, he's cooked. Tough scenes there for the Heaters. You hate to see it. What about Kawhi? He's a fun guy, but we just don't know what he's doing. in a surprise twist to nobody, as I broke down on yesterday's show about how weird it is to not tell your work, like, what's going on? Oh, nothing. I'm never going to tell you anything. It's like, but we're paying you to do your job. He's like, don't care. All right. Thanks, Kawhi. Basically, he's got inflammation in that right knee of his, and he's still questionable for game one against the Mavericks, which is, I believe, Monday morning our time, right? So Lawrence Frank came out and said, our medical staff is doing everything they can to get the inflammation down so he can play. Progress has been made, but more progress needs. The inflammation needs to continue to reduce so he can do functional basketball movements. Functional basketball movements. Jesus! My galaxy brain theory, though, is, I'll tell you what.
It's a trap!
Do you reckon it's just a bit of gamesmanship? They did come out and say it's not gamesmanship. And I'm like, that's something that a bit of gamesmanship would say, isn't it? This thing that definitely is gamesmanship. Oh, it's not gamesmanship. That's gamesmanship right there. You're doing the thing that's gamesmanship. What are you doing? I love it. But this is the thing. Like, it's so hard to get a read on this Dallas Clippers series anyway, let alone without Kawhi doing weird stuff. Because he's just a weird cat anyway, and we've seen this before. He's like, my knee. I'll be really mysterious about it. And then he's just out. It's like, he might be back for game three. Nah, just out. He's actually hurt it again. You're like, all right, cool. Is that where we're at? This one seems at least like they've got a bit of optimism. But again, gamesmanship, they should sound like they've got a bit of optimism. I will believe it when he's actually out there on the court. Caruso putting on a Caruso. Now, if you ever needed to realize just how wonky the writers are in today's journalistic circles when it comes to the big names like Woj and Shams, no one's ever accused them of being good writers. They are amazing news gatherers and news dispersers. They are horrible writers. Woj today, after further evaluation today, reduced swelling around Bulls, Alex Caruso, left ankle, has increased optimism on his chances to play. Using reduced and increased in the same sentence is just unbelievably stupid. So what's happening? Well, because the inflammation has reduced, it has increased his chance. Like, what are you saying? Just say he's a better chance to actually get out there on the court because inflammation is, like, getting better. So his availability will likely become a game-time decision. Okay, good. If he actually plays, I really, really like the Bulls' chances. If he doesn't, I really sort of struggle. So we'll talk about that in the game previews later on, but geez, can we just get a grasp on none of this? Like, I use big words to sound smart. Increased and reduced. What are you saying, Woj? What are you doing? God, didn't you learn anything working for the bloody New Jersey Inquirer? Whatever it was. Anyway, there was a big old chat with the Ringer that Wemby had. Harry's like, I've received some messages from NBA players looking to join the Spurs. Some messages from NBA players might be like, I don't know, Blake Wesley's mates. It's like Lou Williams, Jamal Crawford. Just go, I don't want to retire. Can I come and play with you? But look, if you're an NBA player, if you're Chris Paul this offseason, is there a ready-made team for you to walk onto where you are a contender? You know? It's an interesting setup. It'd be funny to see like Chris Paul on the Sixers, for instance, or Miami next year. Probably not Boston. Probably not. Maybe not the Lakers, but it would be funny if it all sort of came full circle from David Stern nixing that trade from New Orleans to the Lakers if he ended up landing there. But we'll talk about the Warriors in a second, because Warriors and Atlanta being eliminated yesterday was all very, very, very crazy and all very all in the moment. Now we've got a day to actually sort of talk it out. They're two very interesting franchises. But otherwise, Wemby, if you are like the sort of Chris Paul type of player who's out there going, what do I do? And if you're the Spurs, you're like, God, we just wasted an entire like record-setting year from our rookie French phenom. Should we get him some actual good teammates? I mean, the answer to that is yes, you idiots. But at the same time, like, Chris Paul might be a little bit too cooked, if you know what I'm saying. Oh, we'll teach him how to play right. Well, maybe just get a half-decent teammate for him. The best part, though, was Wemby going, I feel like I'm immune to, like, distractions, like partying, alcohol, and drugs. Why would I ever do that? I don't have nothing to compensate for because I choose to face everything that we have inside of us. This motherfucker's been reading Camus. Like, I didn't realize that Victor Wembanyama was the next of the greatest French philosophers. This is amazing. It goes Jean-Paul Sartre, Albert Camus, Victor Wembanyama. Love it. But the entire vibe behind this of Wemby going, I don't need any of these distractions. It's like, I just don't think you've partied hard enough. But at the same time, he's like, I'm French. I've been drinking wine since I was 4 years old, huh? do you think James Harden sees like this sort of quote from Wemby goes, I can fix that. I know a couple of places. Don't let James Harden anywhere near Wemby. Even Tony Parker, like, if Wemby spent 1 year in San Antonio and Tony Parker's not going like, I shall sue you some of my places, huh? It is very good for the French place, French fellows like us, huh? They have some sort of TV stars that we can't get around, huh? I love it. It's a good chat. Good on you, Wemby. He seems like a fascinating, weird cat, but someone who's definitely still really young. The last little bit of news, Team USA. So we talked out this Team USA roster, right? And the more I've sat on this, the more I've sort of, you know, gone, this is going to be a team that's going to be very old and possibly very cooked by the end of this playoff run, depending on how far some of these dudes go. Because, like, the thing is, LeBron, KD, Steph's already been knocked out. Booker, like, they could all be done by the first round. Just saying. So, at the same time, the age, the little bit of a break, who knows what's going to happen there. Just keep your eyes out. I can't wait for the boomers. Let's get around them. But Kyrie Irving had some vibes. Kyrie Irving, he's a dude who just always has a few vibes, you know what I'm saying? Usually, they're moronic. But anyway, this one was pretty good. I grew up in a time when we actually had to try out for USA basketball. And we did meet up as a group and as peers. And there was a mutual respect that we earned from one another and trying out and then seeing what five messed well. This sounds like somebody didn't make the team. I don't know, Kyrie. You should have been playing for the Boomers, where you were born. What are you doing, you dickhead? I can't believe Kyrie. Well, actually, no, I completely can believe that Kyrie Irving is having the fucking gall to be like, oh, I can't believe I didn't get named for USA Basketball. It's like, yeah, because you were born in Australia, you dickhead. Blow it out your ass. I mean, we don't really need him on the Boomers anymore, do we? We'd still take him. There was a moment there where you're like, Ben Simmons, Kyrie Irving, Josh Giddey. Jeez, our point guard stocks are amazing. Would you want Kyrie Irving on the Boomers gym? Yeah, nah, yes, because he's fucking awesome and born in Australia. What are we doing here? What are we doing here? Right, let's do some playoff previews. Just really wanted to quickly go through and like have the sort of three big questions for each of these playoff series because we've now got, what, six of them set. They kick off on Sunday morning our time. We've got the 2 8-seed playing games on Saturday morning. We have the actual kickoff of the playoffs on Sunday. What we might do on Sunday night is just do a quick whip around show because I'll be in the studio anyway for AFL and we might jump on, do a quick NBA Australia for you Sunday night, Monday morning consumption, because then the Monday morning games are all really early. So I don't know. We'll see how we go. But either way, we have a chaos setup where the 1 and 8s, and this is like the sort of weird disadvantage of being the 1 seed. It's like, well, we still don't know who we have to play 2 days out from playing them. You're like, yeah, that does sort of stink. And it's weird. Like, and this is the sort of weird thing we meant when the idea that gets thrown out every year, like the 1 seed should be able to choose who they play. And so should the 2 and the 3. And you're like, yeah, it does sort of like work as a bit of a disadvantage for a 1 seed to be like, well, fuck, how's our prep going? It's like, well, you can still prep. You've got 2 teams and you can basically pick which one's going to win. But either way, the 1-8, let's start in the East. Boston will play, obviously, the winner of Miami versus Chicago. Without Jimmy Butler, I still kind of maybe expect Chicago to be a tough out. They could easily beat the this Miami team without Butts. Without playoff Jimmy, just... But the thing is, Boston's 3-0 against both of them. So whoever actually gets into this 1-8 play-in, the big three questions for this would be simply, how many points will Boston win each game by as they sweep them? Will it be a minimum of 12? Probably. Can Jason Tatum just like take every fourth quarter off? That's another good question. Will either of these teams take a game off Boston? The answer will probably be no. No gentleman sweep here. If the Celtics have a gentleman sweep in the first round against either of these teams, it is a failure of a start to their playoffs. Is it a failure? Yes. But yeah. So the burning big question for the 1-8 in the East would simply be, right, Boston sweep, but by how much? Knicks, Philly, 2-7. This is an absolutely amazing setup. The season record was 3-1 for the Knicks, but three of those games were without Joel Embiid. And as I've sort of said before, it's a lot easier to beat a Philly team that's starting Mo Bamba and Paul Reed in place of, I don't know, the reigning MVP. But the big things, obviously, the three matchups that you're looking at in this one are Brunson versus Maxey right off the bat. You're two awesome point guards. How awesome can they be? How can they slow each other down? Can they slow each other down? OG Anunoby, what does he do? And does he just go, right, everybody else on Philly, not named Maxey or Embiid, you're not scoring because I'm just going to ruin your shit. And then on top of that, it's Embiid. How healthy is he? Like, that's the biggest question for all of this, right? He looked absolutely ruined at the end of that game the other day. He looked ruined after the first, to be honest, the first like 6 minutes. It's like, he's cooked. Pack her up, boys. You're done. But they bounced back. He walked into those two threes late in that fourth quarter. The biggest thing is, like, defensively, Embiid chasing around Jalen Brunson and trying to get out to the perimeter, that feels like a bad time for all involved if you're a Sixers fan. Can Hartenstein, the other Mitch Robinson, and Precious Achiuwa have any sort of a crack at Joel Embiid? Can they slow him down? It feels unlikely, but at the same time, I feel like Embiid just being that little bit undercooked because of that time off, coming back from the injury, this all sort of leads pretty easily into Tibbs just losing his mind, playing his dudes 472 minutes each per game, which is some sort of statistical improbability. But at the same time, I think he does it. He will find a way. Ice! That's what Tibbs will do. He will put them on ice! But really, because you've got Embiid versus like the battery of big men for the Knicks, will he be able to dominate in the way that we've sort of become accustomed to? Or for a dude who can't really come back out past the free throw line on defense at the moment because he's just that cooked all the time, is it going to be a bit of a stretch too far? I feel like it is. And I feel like I trust the role players of this Knicks team way more than the Philly role players at this point, right? Tobias Harris. You know my vibes on Tobias Harris. They're not great. Hey, Tobias. Embiid's coming back from injury. Tyrese Maxey's being locked up by Jalen Brunson and co. Tobias, we're paying you $35 million. Can you score us 17 points? He's like, you got a boss. Here's 11 points on 11 shots. It's not what we asked for Tobias. What are you doing? He's like, oh, man, just cashing my checks. My point is also going to be that any team that actually just has Tobias Harris on it is never going to get past the second round. They should just call him second round Tobias because you're not getting out of the second round if you have to rely on Tobias Harris. Now, I've said that. Prove me wrong, Tobias. Prove me wrong. And that's when I took that personally. I don't think Tobias Harris takes anything personally. Anyway. Nurse versus Tibbs is a coaching matchup. Fascinating setup. I think the Knicks win this 4-2. I think Philly will take a game or two just because there's probably like an inevitable Embiid fucking drops 42 on somebody's head and they sneak out a win probably in Philly and they maybe sneak one out in MSG out of nowhere where Brunson maybe has a bit of a rough night shooting. But defensively, I worry about the Sixers. More importantly, I worry about the Sixers on offense because, oh boy, their games against the New York Knickerbockers this year have not been pretty. They have scored exactly 76 points, 76 points, 92 points, and 96 points. That's not very good, is it? No. No, it's not, Jim. It's horrible, in fact.
This is horrible! There's no other way to put it!
There is no other way to put it. So I expect the Knicks to win this probably 4-2, and that's my pick for that series, 4-2. The New York Knickerbockers of New York City. They've not played each other in a playoff round since like 1989, which is pretty remarkable, but here we are. 3-6 is Milwaukee Indy. Indy won this series 3-1 this season. Bucks have lost 7 of the last 11. They're the 6th-ranked offense versus the 2nd. Milwaukee's still 19th defensively. Indy's 24th. We know that. No Giannis for at least game one. And it feels like probably no Giannis. The Bucks are 4-5 without Giannis this season. the big three things here are Dame versus Halliburton. Obviously, we know that Dame is just a fucking roadblock on defense, like just a traffic cone. Halliburton, if he's vaguely 85% health, should have a fucking field day this series against this Bucks defense. But the problem is I'm not entirely convinced that Halliburton's at 85%. So I feel like Milwaukee can make this way more of a series than we maybe expect. But Indy with Siakam, with Halliburton, they should be too good. If Giannis is out for, the first two games, Indy probably take at least one of those, and they probably go on to win it 4-2. Giannis probably tries to come back, probably fails. I think Indy win this series, and I think they win it 4-3. Because you've got the other big matchups, obviously. So I mentioned Halliburton versus Dame. Siakam, is there anybody on this Bucks team that can actually try to slow down Siakam? Chris Middleton, he's looked pretty up and down since he came back. They've got Jay Crowder and co. Siakam should, again, also just feast. Then you got Miles Turner versus Brook Lopez. Basically, the two sort of, we block lots of shots and we shoot three centers, which is kind of fun. Miles Turner, again, should sort of be out there being able to run around and run rings around Brook Lopez. I really like this matchup for Indy, and I think they should win it. Milwaukee, over the last 41 games of the season, 21 and 20. They're basically a 500 team. Like, what are we doing here? Milwaukee are not good. Doc Rivers has not been great. I think Doc versus Rick Carlisle. Give me Rick Carlisle on this one. Indy, let's give Milwaukee the benefit of the doubt where they've still got Dame, they've still got Middleton. There will be games where they just go fucking bang, even without Giannis. And Indy's defense is that suspect that Milwaukee will be in this series. I think Indy, though, win it in the end, 4-3. And then we've got the 4-5. Cleveland versus Orlando. A 2-2 series this season. Cavs 16 on offense. Orlando 22nd. Defensively, Cleveland 7th. Orlando 3rd. But since the All-Star break, Orlando is the best team in the NBA on defense in terms of defensive rating. Cleveland's 25th. That's a big drop-off. It's wonky as hell. So since the All-Star, Cleveland's on offense is 20th, Orlando's 19th. The big question here, it's not so much matchup-based because the matchups are really wonky in this game, right? Well, in this series. The big one is literally Orlando's offense. Does it work? Does it work? Does this Orlando Magic offense work up against a half-decent defense at times, not post-All-Star, in Cleveland? I think Orlando can do enough. Had a couple of really good games against them this season. Franz Wagner, but Franz not being able to shoot is a bit weird, so I don't know what's happened to him. But in terms of the matchups, you think about the front court, it's like the tale of two tapes. You got the front court of Palo Bancaro, Franz Wagner, hello, and Wendell for Orlando, up against Mobley and Allen. But then Cleveland sort of tend to play, Maxi Strus at the three? They've got a really, really small perimeter trio when they roll out Strus, Donnie Mitchell, and Darius Rucker, Judy Garland. When you have the likes of my sweet baby Caris LeVert, Isaac Okoro, but also the minivan, George Niang, he's probably a little bit more important than he should be in a series like this, but it's also a series that's built around his strengths, right? It's like, okay, just chase Franz Wagner around. Have a crack at Paolo. You're a big unit, George. Have a crack, mate. And he's like, all right. So I feel like you'll see a lot more George Niang than you probably expect. But at the same time, you've got Franz Wagner going, how do I stop Maxi Strus? And then you have like the other side of the tape, right? The backcourts, Darius Rucker, Judy Garland, up against Donnie Mitchell, up against Jalen Suggs and Gary Harris. Markelle Fultz and Ice Cole Anthony. It's such a weird matchup, right? Because obviously you think about offensively, that should be fucking awesome for Cleveland. Orlando's defense, though, with Suggs and co, might put a bit of pressure on them. Fultz is still a bit of a unit. Ice Cole Anthony's not going to convince anybody there's a half-decent defender anytime soon. But so you feel like the advantage offensively is with the Orlando front court, but with the Cleveland backcourt. And defensively, can Orlando stymie them? I think overall, we're going to see a bit of Johnny Isaac, probably not that much Jingling Joe Ingles. Up against his good mate George Niang, though, that'll be pretty funny. They've both popped on the show. I think Orlando win this. I think Cleveland go off the boil. I'm not entirely convinced the Garland-Mitchell combo works well enough to get by this Orlando defense. Of course, the big question is obviously going to be Orlando's offense. Can it do anything? And this is why I've screamed and yelled and kicked and fucking bitched and moaned all the way through the trade deadline. Get a fucking point guard, Orlando, and you could win the East. They didn't, and here we are. It's like if they had someone to put next to Suggs that wasn't just Ice Cole Anthony or Markel Fultz. Anthony Black, still a couple of years away, but here we are. Orlando, they should win this series. Give me Orlando, 4-2. This should be an absolute rip-snorter one, though. Like, it's going to be pretty brutal to watch, but I think it'll be really fun, really close, really entertaining. I think Orlando can win this 4-2. Out West! Way out West, where the basketball is played pretty hard, and it used to be the Seattle Supersonics versus the Phoenix Suns all the time. Trying to get away here, Oklahoma City versus the 8 seed. Josh, giddy up! They're 4-2 against New Orleans, 4-3 versus Sacramento over their last little bits. Pretty interesting setup either way, right? So I think they went 2-2 versus Sacramento, though, in this season, and they went 2-1 against the Pelicans, OKC. With the Pelicans missing Zion, so Zion, he's cooked with his hamstring. Obviously, we talked about that on yesterday's show. Spindles Ingram still coming back from injury. If they get by Sacramento, you'd feel more worried about them if they had Ingram and CJ McCollum and co. at full strength, but they don't. And the Kings, look, I think the Kings would give them a more fun series, to be honest. And I'm now basically tipping the Kings. I'm going to get to that later in the game previews. But 2-2 against Sacramento this season, 2-1 against the Pels. Third best offense for OKC, fourth best defense. SGA, he's going to cook no matter what. You know that. And I think Sacramento probably, between the Souvlaki King against Chet and the likes of De'Aaron Fox trying to just carve up Keegan Murray, you know, turning into Johnny Storm, they'll turn that into a bit of a series, but I still think OKC would beat them 4-3 at least, Sacramento, and probably 4-2 if it's New Orleans, just saying. So there's a little bit of a prediction before we get to those games on Monday. Denver versus Lakers. This is the big one. Nuggets-Lakers. It's a repeat of last year's Western Conference Finals. The Lakers are, of course, 3-0. The Lakers are 0-3 against them, obviously, this year. 0-4 against them in the playoffs last year as well because they got swept. Oh, say all the Lakers fans. But it was the closest sweep ever. Yeah, you still fucking lost every game, mate. What are you doing? The size of LA versus the size of Denver is obviously still an amazing matchup. It should make it pretty close again. You do wonder about Denver this year, just in terms of their depth. It's a lot of Peyton Watson. They don't have Al Jefe Green. They don't have Bruce Brown. They don't have those sort of weird veteran jacks of all trade kind of dudes. It's a lot of Peyton Watson and co. And you're like, oh, is that a good thing? Christian Braun. Probably not. And so if anyone on Denver gets even like banged up for a second, like if there's a little bit of a calf strain, if there's an ankle turn, the Lakers could be right in this. But the thing is, you turn that around and say it about the same thing about the Lakers. It's like their backup crew isn't exactly going to burn the house down. Spencer Dinwiddie, I mean, sure. D'Lo playing out of his ass, but now you've got like a defense of Denver to cope with, and D'Lo might just go completely off the boil. We see him just completely lose it. He can also have like 3 weeks of the greatest basketball you'll ever see. He could also have 3 weeks of going 3-for-16. Then you've got LeBron, you've got AD, you've got Rui Hachimura, but Denver are basically built in a lab to try to contain LeBron James, Michael Porter Jr., and Aaron Air Gordon. There's just length and size everywhere to make LeBron's life a little bit of hell. Jokic versus AD is an awesome matchup, we know that, but Jokic just eats up this Lakers team. And those backcourts, right? Like D'Lo and Austin Reeves up against Jam Jamal Crawford and KCP. Jam Jamal Murray just absolutely shreds when it comes to the playoffs. Like, forget playoff Jimmy. What about playoff Jamal? Like, he just, what is it? Like, no one has like a bigger jump in their stats when it comes to playoffs. And yeah, I think Denver still win this series. I think it's closer than it was the closest sweep of all time, Jim. Yeah, I think this one's 4-2 this year. I think the Lakers actually snag a couple of games just because Denver can't throw like a Bruce Brown or someone in there to plug some gaps here and there defensively. And the Lakers sneak out one or two. But I think Denver get it done. 4-1 or 4-2. Minnesota-Phoenix. This is a weird, wonky matchup because obviously Phoenix 3-0 against the Wolves this year. Minnesota, the best defense in the NBA on defensive rating. Phoenix 13th. Offensively, Phoenix at 10th. Minnesota 17th. Ant-Man can't score against Phoenix though. Will that change? Maybe. You've got Devin Booker, Brad Beal. It's a bit of a tough one. It's a tough matchup for Ant-Man. He sort of like hit like this weird wonky part. I still think Minnesota get by them though. This is a weird one. So Ant-Man and Conley versus Booker and Beal. I think once this all sort of slows down and Minnesota get into a bit of a groove and go, right, we understand what Phoenix are. We can throw a bunch of dudes at KD. Rudy Gobert, maybe not so much. Maybe Rudy gets played off the court in this season, this series, but you've still got McDaniels, you've got Kat, you've got those big dudes, you've got Naz Reid. Because I don't feel like we're going to see too much Nurk. Like Nurk and Eubanks, it shouldn't be at all of a matchup, right, for Minnesota. But we saw this season, Phoenix still made it work because they have this awesome small ball lineup where KD can play the four or the five and away you go. KD versus McDaniels is the big thing for me. Like, is Kat healthy is another big one. And can Ant-Man actually just be a super-duper star? Because it will click. I think for Anthony Edwards, it'll hit like game three and he'll be like, wait a minute, I now know how to play this team. And off they go. And he can also, we've seen it before, he can ratchet up the defense to horrifying degrees where he just like ruins Devin Booker's fucking life. And everybody will be tipping Phoenix as like this big upset. I think Minnesota win this 4-3. I think it's an awesome series. I think it comes down to the wire. I think the matchups of like KD versus McDaniels or Kat, whoever they try to throw on him, and then whether or not they try to roll out Nurk at some point, pull those levers and get Kat versus and Kat and Gobert versus Nurk as they eat up Nurk, and then Phoenix go, we've made a horrible mistake, what are we doing? And Booker and Beal, obviously, versus Ant-Man and Conley. It's just a fantastic setup for a series that goes really, really, really long. So give me Minnesota in seven. And then finally, Clippers, Dallas, 4-5, Kawhi. How does this all roll out? Nobody knows. 2-1 Clippers this year, post All-Star, though. Dallas were the seventh best offense. The Clippers were, I think, the 14th. They were fourth overall for the season, though. But they've not been very good lately. Defensively, it's 22nd for the Clippers. That is brutal. Dallas, yeah, pretty good. 113.1, a bit higher. 18th overall for the season. The big question, obviously, is literally the biggest thing that will decide this series is Kawhi and his health. Can he play? If he can play, can he slow down Luka? If he's out there on the court, he probably can at least have a crack at Luka. I don't know if it'll really matter. Harden and Paul George versus Kyrie and Luka is still a pretty good matchup, but I still think the way that Dallas are playing together between Gafford, the swing dudes of Hardaway, the lesser, and of course, PJ Hamilton, Washington, they've just got a couple of extra dudes here in Dante Exum and co that they can throw at this Clippers team just to make their life a little bit, harder. Like Zoobs will be looking at this going, oh yeah, sure. But Gafford, he just doesn't miss. Luka, Kyrie, I think there's probably just too much scoring, too much like awesomeness that I think Dallas win this in five. Like pour one out for the Clippers. Like Harden can't stop anybody. Paul George will be out there just going, why am I doing this all by my goddamn self? This sucks. And Kawhi's like, yeah, call me in 4 months' time, bro. I'm not even going to play the Olympics. Because really, it's like you've got the double, the duos, the superstar duos, even if Kawhi's not playing, Harden and Paul George against Kyrie and Luka. Cool. I still think like the advantage lies with the Dallas Mavericks, randomly enough now, with their role players. Between Dante Sexum up Exum, Josh Greeny Green, PJ Hamilton Washington, Hardaway the lesser. They, Maxi Kleber, hello, Dwight Powell and co. They've just got more options than I think this Clippers team does, where they've got, what, I don't know, a bit of T-Man and a bit of Norm Powell. Not a giant, like Plumlee. You're like, oh, okay, cool. So give me the Mavs in five. Awesome array of series, though. Awesome array of series. I'm excited. All right. Should we do... we'll do Dickhead of the Week and a Magic Tweet of the Day after a quick break, as well as your Nas. Or actually, nah, screw it. We'll just go straight into it just because it's a bit of fun. And we'll just do a bit of the Magic Tweet of the Day. This evening, I delivered a keynote around the importance of diversity at the 20th Annual National Diversity Leadership Conference in Dallas, Texas. I really enjoyed connecting and gaining insight from diversity leaders from across the country. What do we say? Thanks, Magic. I love it. He's just like, Dallas, Texas. It's like, oh, that Dallas. Amazing. Another good one, though, from the other day. happy birthday to the captain, at Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, 33. And then a couple of, like, three different photos of them together hugging, playing together and looking good. And it's like, that's great. What do we say? Thanks, Magic. But my favorite one is obviously, this will be an amazing night for the NBA and the play-ins will be just as good as the playoffs. Look at the star power playing tonight in the West. LeBron and AD against Zion Williamson and then Steph Curry against De'Aaron Fox and Domantas Sabonis. Tomorrow we get to watch stars Joel Embiid and Tyrese Maxey against Jimmy Butler and then Trae Young against DeMar DeRozan in the East. Thanks, Magic. I just love his, like, programming alert ones. But then, of course, this is great. NBA fans all over the world, this is what we wanted. The world champion Denver Nuggets versus my Los Angeles Lakers. Get ready because this will be must-see TV. Thanks, Magic. And then finally, I love the good game recap ones. Let's do it. D'Lo Russell made the two plays to seal the victory for the Lakers. First the steal and then the three-pointer in the corner. LeBron had another strong game with 23-9-9 and AD was a monster on the boards. The Lakers were phenomenal at the free throw line in the fourth quarter to hold off the Pelican surge. Thanks, Magic. I love it. He actually showed a bit of love to D'Lo considering it was the guy that he fucking shipped out to get Lonzo in. So that's kind of nice. Good on you, Magic. But of course, it is Friday. Let's finish this off before we get into the year, Nas, and get out of here with a bit of Dickhead of the Week.
Dickhead of the Week!
I mentioned this on yesterday's show, Spindles Ingram being benched in the fourth quarter. He's had a sook, and it's like, yeah, Brandon, I don't know, you're playing like dog shit. Zion goes down, and he's having a sook. It's like, there is now a distinct sort of pattern emerging of you having a sook, you getting benched, and then you sooking more. It happened in the World Cup, and it's happened in the play-in game in the 7-8 one. It's an interesting moment, I think. We'll get to the game previews after Yenars, but jeez, if Spindles Ingram doesn't show up for this one, like, he's done in New Orleans, right? Just saying. And, of course, this is the Draymond Green Memorial Dickhead of the Week Award, so it's got to be for Draymond Green, because you might remember one Draymond Green tweeting out during the, the NCAA title stuff, right? Basically saying over the course of that one, Zach Edey? And the way that he basically sort of cooked it and saying, like, basically, I saw his fucking, here we go, job well done, 35. You did your job tonight. It was him that made Edey quit with about 19 minutes to go in the second half. There was a turnover and I saw Edey body language walking back. He was done. Now rewatch the game from that point on. Well, Draymond, Tommy Beer got him. Job well done, 10. You did your job tonight. It was him that made Draymond quit. With about 11 minutes to go in the fourth quarter, Sabonis had a putback dunk and I saw Draymond body language walking back. He was done. Now rewatch from that point on. Hashtag free game. Oh, I love it. Draymond out here talking shit, getting hit. Nothing better. All right, let's do some yenars right after this.
This is Cam Glidden.
This is Anthony Drimmick.
This is Mitch McCarron.
This is Jason Kadee.
This is Daryl McDonald.
Hey guys, this is Hugh Greenwood.
Yo, what's going on? This is Ellie.
This is Mark Worthington, or commonly known as Wurtho, and you're listening to NBA Australia.
You're listening to NBA Australia.
And you're listening to NBA Australia.
And you're listening to NBA Australia.
You're listening to NBA Australia.
You're listening to NBA Australia.
And you're listening to NBA Australia.
You're listening to NBA Australia.
All right, let's do it. Let's do some NBA Australia. Yeah, now it's brought to you by the NBA Australia Shop.
Steve up.
Get your merch, get your merch.
Wear it.
Get your merch, get your merch. Get your merch, get your merch.
Get your merch, get your merch. That's right. NBAAustralia.com/shop. Click through on the socials as well there. They're all there. It's very pretty. Get a hoodie, get a t-shirt, get a coffee mug, get a stubby holder. That's what it's all about. I do love this. We've got a couple of really good boomers one. But yeah, the year Nas, we're going to do some other ones that are just like a little bit Warriors and Hawks focused. But we've got a couple of good ones. Matty O sent through the King James. Won't be fun when the Boomers punch him right in the face for the gold. Yeah, nah. So LeBron posted out the USA men's basketball national team. And you are like, yeah, it is an interesting mix of like young and old. Maybe too old? And remember, it's a champion team that'll beat a team of champions every day of the week. So hopefully Gorge gets our boomers into shape and we can beat this bloody old shitty USA team. And Reese W sent up a good one. What up, Bruzzy? Boomer squad released. Not sure how I feel about it. Massive holes at the 3-4 now that Creek and Simmons aren't involved. Disappointed Creek didn't at least get a chance because he's at least better than two-thirds of these blokes. Interesting. And would have been the perfect size, defense scoring perfect what was needed. But anyway, Giddy, Mills, McVeigh, Reith, Landale, Daniels, Green, Ingles, Exum, Cook, Magne, Dele, with a massive asterisk next to Dele because Kyrie Irving didn't get named for USA, so does he want to play in the Olympics? Thoughts? Yeah, nah, look, I love the McVeigh thing. Look, the Creek thing is obviously, I think Creek has had his problems in and out of, like, the national squad, right? I think we've all sort of known about this for a while, and the way that he missed out on the World Cup and has been, like, obviously shredding for the NBL. This year obviously dealt with some injuries and shit like that, but we do sort of lack that prototypical bigger three who can sort of do a little bit of something-something, but at the same time, Aussie Matty T sort of gives you that sort of same vibe. Maybe not so much the driving, the playmaking thing, but the McVeigh call, I kind of like it. He's just like an X Factor where he's got stones the size of bloody Uluru, and away you go. The Grim Reaper, doo-wop, doo-wop, bop-bop-bop, doo-wop, Magne and Landale, it's a pretty good big man sort of like rotation, I guess. But then you sort of look at someone like Joel Embiid, and you're like, oh, we might get fucking smashed. But they're probably our three best big men we can roll out there. Dyson, Greeny, Exum. Like, Dele is probably still the odd man out where, like, we probably need to take one less guard and probably one more swing type of, like, Jack White or Xavier Cookie Cooks, right? Maybe McVeigh as well. But Giddy, Thrills, McVeigh, Reef, Landell, the Dustbuster, Greeny, Jingles, Exum, Cooks is obviously in there, Magne and Dele. The Jack McVeigh, the Jack White. That's the sort of big question. Aussie Matty T, like, how do we feel about it? My thoughts are, I think Dele's on the bubble. I think you need as much sort of like speed and size on the perimeter as you possibly can have. And a lot of that is right there. So Dele might be the one. And to be honest, like, if we're all going to be brutally, brutally, brutally honest, the Jingles piece might be the one where you just go, oh, that we might have carried him. But I'm actually fine with it because he's been a fucking amazing servant. Same with Dele. Roll the old boys out there one more time. Why the fuck not? What do you reckon? All right, let's do some other Yunas. Love a couple of these ones. Do we see Draymond back with the Warriors? Yeah, nah. I think, yeah. Because I think they almost have to keep Steph super fucking happy at this point. And he's just so intrinsic to everything they do defensively. And even Mike Dunleavy came out and said, yeah, look, I can't imagine a scenario where he's not back. So yeah, nah. Yeah, I think we keep him in the Warriors fold. Because the other aspect of it is, like, which team do you see giving up legitimate assets, legitimate anything to go get Draymond? I think it's really hard because I think every other team in the NBA is kind of like, all right, he'd be a definite plus for our team on defense. How does he work outside of the environs of the Warriors? And does he act up? Like, the fact that he's out there, I'll get to this in one more second as well. The fact that he's out there causing as much havoc as he fucking did, and that's within the Warriors where he respects the shit out of everybody. They have his back. They all fucking love him. He loves them. If he's suddenly playing for, like, fucking, I don't know, Memphis, if he's playing for Chicago, do you think that's going to be the same sort of vibe? Yeah, nah, nah. Because this is it. Did Draymond Green cost the Warriors a title chance this year? Yeah, nah. Yeah. If he doesn't get fucking suspended like an absolute moron multiple times this season, don't forget. Remember the indefinite suspension? Because he's a fucking idiot and he keeps trying to take off like every Eastern European dude's head because he's a lunatic. I don't know. Maybe don't cost your fucking team a bunch of games, therefore costing them seeding, therefore putting them in a fucking knockout game for the 9-10 seat. Yeah. Draymond Green completely fucking cost the Warriors their season. He cooked it. And the vibes were completely off. To be honest, Draymond Green cooked the Warriors the last 2 years. As soon as he punched Jordan Poole in the face, this team has been fucked, and it's all his fault. Do we see Clay back on the Warriors? Yeah, nah, no. I think this one might be the one that just the Warriors go, this one hurts, but we're going to pull off the Band-Aid. We're going to give Kuminga more shots. We're going to give Moody more shots. We're going to start the move on. We're going to try to build it. Like, we're going to move on from Chris Paul, from Draymond. We're going to give Gary Payton, Moses Moody, and Johnny Kuminga way more, like, responsibility and go from there and see if we can sort of at least patch together something around Steph in his latter years. But I think Clay's the casualty here, right? Like, unless he comes back on a really, 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 really team-friendly deal, I think it's much more likely he's playing for, like, the fucking Lakers or something next year. Is this the end of the Warriors dynasty? Yeah, nah. Yeah, I just think you can't expect, like, superhero fucking Steph Curry to save your ass game in, game out, right? And this is why, like, back in the late teens, they went and got Kevin Durant as well, because it lessened their, I don't know, the problem scale. The problems they would have got lessened because they had both Steph Curry and Kevin Durant. The margin for error got much, 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 much wider because if anything happened to Steph, they still had Kevin Durant. Now they don't have anyone vaguely comparable to, like, Kevin Durant. And also, Clay's cooked. And Steph is fucking old. They're fucked. It sucks, but here we are. I think Steph should stay. And Chris Paul reckons he's out. So that's kind of, well, he's probably out of, you know, the old Golden State. But it'd be fun where he sort of lands. Hawks. Can this entire situation be salvaged? Yeah, nah. Yeah, by trading Trae Young. Yeah. Otherwise, probably nah, because I just don't think Trey and DeJounte can play together. It'd be interesting to see if they try to move on from DeJounte or if they just pull the fucking ripcord on Trey. Should he? He'd probably fetch more just because, A, bigger name. Probably the front offices around the NBA are like, yeah, we can talk ourselves way more into Trey Young turning our franchise around than we can DeJounte Murray. So, with that in mind, does Trey get traded? And is there someone that he lands that turns a team into an instant contender? Yeah, nah, yeah. Orlando. Let's effing go, Magic. It would be funny as hell. To be honest, you put him on Brooklyn next to Mikal Bridges and a couple of those dudes and just go, right, Trey, run and gun. Let's go. Piss Ben Simmons off. Who knows what happens there. You put him, like, sort of anywhere else that has, like, a sort of real gap when it comes to actual point guards, and it would be fascinating to see how quickly he could turn around a team. San Antonio, does he make them an instant contender? He makes them instantly interesting. I don't think he makes them an instant contender. Ironically, DeJounte Murray would have definitely helped the Spurs. Just imagine the defense then. DeJounte and Wemby. Just saying, would have been pretty good. But yeah, Trae Young and Orlando. Sign me up. Trae Young and Brooklyn. Fun. Sign me up. Trae Young other places, it gets a bit more dicey because you think about places that are actually in need of a point guard. There's not too many. Like, if he goes to Toronto, like, they're still cooked anyway. You want the ball in Scoob's hands. The Bulls, perhaps, like, they looked interesting when they had Lonzo. If he's on the Chicago Bulls, perhaps it's kind of a little bit more fun. Then you have, like, what? The Pacers don't need anybody. The Bucks don't need anybody, even though Trey would be probably better than Dame. Outside of that, it gets very, very thin on the ground as to who needs him. Like, the Lakers, obviously, if they get LeBron, AD, and Trae Young together, it's kind of fun. Again, there's not too many other takers out there. Maybe the Pelicans, maybe the Spurs, but it's pretty thin on the ground outside of that for Trae Young, just saying. So unpopular opinion of the day is basically, I think that. I think he can actually still really help.
Now look at me, please. Look at me.
I do think he can make Orlando or Brooklyn a much more, like, he can make Orlando a legit contender, depending on what they give up. Brooklyn, he makes them at least a, the thing is, I think with Brooklyn, he just sort of gets them to the exact spot the fucking Atlanta are, so not an actual contender. Right, what about Outback Steakhouse? It's Friday at Outback, and you know what that means? Oh yeah, 4-for-1 icy cold TGIF Foster's oil drum cans. That's right, full of icy cold Foster's lager. It's definitely Australian for beer. No one at home drinks this. What are you talking about? Still, goes great with the flame grilled take. And today's flame grilled take is, whoever wins the Denver Lakers series wins the title. Only at Outback. You're going to hear a lot of this. I don't exactly agree with it. I think it's wild because now you think about the way that the playoffs are set up. Just in terms of the bracket, Denver, by virtue of being the 2 seed and losing to that weird San Antonio game, would have to beat the Lakers, then have to go through like the Wolves or the Suns, right, in the 3-6, and then play, what, OKC, and then OKC or the Clippers or the Mavs. It's a much tougher road to the finals than Denver probably anticipating and probably could have hoped for. So, but still, iron sharpens iron. Only at Outback. All right, let's take a quick break and do some game previews. Whoops, the Lakers do stink. Right after, let's say this one from Hammer. Or Deli, let's do Deli.
This is Matthew Dellavedova and you're listening to NBA Australia.
All right, let's do it. We actually got a late entrance from Dan Drosher. Yeah, nah, Jimmy Butler is basically just channeling MJ these days. Apparently, Jimmy Butler and Tyler Hero had to be separated in the Miami team bus after last night's loss via Ira Heatbeat. This sounds like it's a troll. I like that. Best and worst teammate all at once. No one works harder. Everyone expects everyone to be like him. Yeah, well, Butler did that already in Minnesota. I think that's just a bit of a fake news troll job. If it's true, it's fucking not funny as, but yeah, no dice. Right, Patty Mills Game Day Baller Game Day Twitter check-in before we do the game previews for the weekend. Patty Mills has been all over these Instagrams. He's got the fish. He's like, what people think NBA dinners are like. It's a nice piece of grilled fish. And what they actually like, it's him and Duncan Robinson eating off plastic plates sitting on like an Esky. That's fucking great. Outfit breakdown when it comes to style, swim with the current. NBA playing game one, Baller Pat. He's got the big jeans on. He's got the big sort of like woolen sort of cardigan jumper. Looks pretty good. There's a kid wearing an 88 Mills jersey walking in. That kid's got to be Aussie. Coolest, little Miami girl. Thanks, auntie and uncle, Baller Pat. Oh, I love that. Fuck, Patty Mills is a legend. Right, let's do some game previews. Game previews, that's right. We've got the 8 seed playing games tomorrow, Saturday morning. And then on Sunday, we actually start the playoffs. So we'll go through the Sunday and Monday games, pick and preview those as well as tomorrow's games. We've already gone through all the playoff series, so the matchups already sort of been broken down a little bit. But tomorrow, Chicago at Miami. Look, without Jimmy Butler, I'm still going to land, I think, with Chicago. DeMar DeRozan in a closeout game. But Miami are 13-9 without Butler this year. They've still got Tyler Hero coming back from his injury. They've still got Bam. They've got Caleb Martin who could just suddenly go, hang on a second, remember how I'm Michael Jordan? And you know what I hate? I'm taking Miami. I hate it. I absolutely hate it, but I'm going to do it because, look, Spoelstra versus Billy D. Chicago, they're 2-2, these two teams. They haven't played against each other since December. Chicago's offense is 12th since the All-Star break. Miami's 18th. But Miami's defense is 2nd since the All-Star break. The Bulls, 27th. They're 22nd for the entire season. Miami's 5th. But 2nd after the All-Star break for Miami's D. I just think at home, the Heat will just have some random dude. It'll be Caleb Martin. It'll be Duncan Robinson, even though he's dealing with a back thing. Probably no Terry Rozier. But if you just run shit through Bam, you've got Tyler Hero. I think. I know that I was bang on Chicago yesterday, but the more I've sat with this, the more I actually like Miami just a little bit more. Just because it would be very on point for Chicago to shit down their leg and completely blow this game when they could actually build up their fans and like, oh my God, we're going to do it. We're actually going to make the playoffs. Oh my God, we got Miami'd. I'm going to go with Spoelstra. I'm going to go with Bam. I'm going to go with Tyler. There goes my hero. And Miami force a 1-8 against the Boston Celtics. It's inevitable, isn't it? It's Thanos. Like between Jovic, Caleb Martin, Kevin Love, Tyler Hero, Bam. I know that the Bulls, I talked about their size yesterday with Vooch and Andre Drummond. I just don't trust Chicago. I can never trust Chicago. So give me the Heat. Then we have Sacramento versus the New Orleans Pelicans. I've switched both my picks from yesterday's show, right? I think I had Chicago and New Orleans. Now I'm going to go Sacramento -1.5. Pelicans are 5-0 over Sacramento this year. 5-0. But I think that's 5-1 because the Sacramento Kings, even without Kevin Huerta, and of course Malik Monk, the way that Keegan Murray's gone, that's fine. I'll just hit every three under the sun. De'Aaron Fox, Domantas Sabonis. You know that my name is Jonas Valanciunas is going to try to kill Sabonis, but Fox is that good. If Spindles Ingram had shown us anything in that 7-8 game, I would be all over New Orleans. But because he had a sook, like you're relying on the, we lit a fire under Brandon Ingram. You can't rely on that. When has that ever actually risen its ugly head and gone, that's a good thing to like sort of jump around? Spindles and CJ alternated scoring 15 and 30 against the Kings this season. Zion played a couple of these games. He played four of them, in fact, and averaged like a lazy 23 points a game. I just think the Kings probably have a little bit too much offense this time around. Like, the New Orleans defense has been really, really good. They can sick Herb Jones and co. and Dyson Daniels onto CJ. I mean, onto Fox. That was the other way around. They can sick them onto Fox, but I think Fox is good enough, and Sabonis is good enough. And if they get enough out of Harrison Barnes and co., the Kings can win this in New Orleans. I don't like this pick. I hate this game. This game is so hard to sort of break down. But if Ingram was healthy, I would go New Orleans. He's back and playing. He looked cooked the other day. I can't trust it. I'm going to go the Kings, who have just been, I don't know. They might have played their NBA finals the other day when they beat the Warriors, and they did certainly celebrate it. But I think they can roll into a 1-8 matchup against OKC. Right. Those are the 8 seed games. What about the actual playoffs? Playoffs. Orlando versus Cleveland. I already broke down this matchup, right? Post All-Star, Orlando's defense has been the best in the NBA. These two teams, 2-2 this year. They both split at home. Only one win was actually less than 10 points. They were all blowouts. I expect Orlando to come into this game and be like, oh, God, what is this? The playoffs? Jeez. Cleveland probably win this game. I think it's pretty close, though. Cleveland, I think, win it. Orlando cover the 4.5-point spread. I think Cleveland hold on to win it like 108-104. I think Donny Mitchell just sort of does enough. He was wildly inefficient for some of these games as well, which is pretty typical of Donny Mitchell. I think Cleveland win game one. I think Orlando keep it close and then probably steal game two. I think it'll take Orlando a little bit to get accustomed to the playoffs. They'll get in there, then they'll be good. And I think they'll win this series, as I mentioned. But Cleveland win game one, Orlando cover. Phoenix, Minnesota. These teams just played the other day. And Phoenix obviously swept the season series 3-0. Ant-Man shot 4 of 16, 6 of 19, and 3 of 7 in those three games. Not good. I think Phoenix may win this first game. Just because Minnesota might feel a little bit more off the boil. KD comes out, looks awesome. Anthony Edwards is still a little bit like, hang on a second, what do we do? As I said, Minnesota win this in 7. I think Phoenix win game one. I'm taking Phoenix +1.5 in game one. I think between KD, Booker, and Beal, you've got plenty of experience. You've got plenty of like solid heads right there. The questions around Minnesota are probably a little bit too big for me right now. Like Cal Anthony Towns, just how healthy is he? Can Ant-Man score anything against this Phoenix team? I think they will, but I think domination will come across like games 2, 3, 4, 5. Where they sort of start really reeling off some wins. So I'll take Phoenix in game one +1.5 against the team they've swept in this season series. So that's at 5:30 a.m. Orlando, Cleveland's 3 a.m. Sunday. Brutal. Philly, New York, 8 a.m. This is awesome. The New York Knickerbockers are 2.5-point favorites. I'm going to take the Knicks. The Knicks are 3-1, as I mentioned, against the Sixers this year. The worry is just like, can Philly score? Against the Knicks, they just haven't. What did I say? 92, 96, 79, and 79 this year for Philly against the Knicks. That is brutal. Brunson versus Maxey. I think Brunson in front of that MSG crowd is going to go massive. I think Embiid will still just be like, by game 3 and 4, Embiid will probably be feeling a little bit better about stuff. He'll figure out the Knicks a little bit, and then he'll start dominating. I think he might struggle in game one. Give me the Knicks, -2.5. Lakers, Denver. All these games are close. We know that, apparently. They haven't been close when Denver have smashed them in these season series this year, but the Lakers looked pretty good against the Pelicans the other day. Lakers are 7.5-point underdogs in this game. I'm taking the Lakers +7.5. 10:30 a.m. on Sunday morning. Lakers 0-7 since the last year's playoffs against Denver. Denver has won 8 straight against them. They've won 13 in the last 15. Denver will win this game, but the Lakers will keep it close. I think it might be a bit of a Jamal Murray game. I think they'll sort of prep as much as they can to slow down the Joker, but I think Denver win, Lakers cover, plus 7.5. Awesome game, though. That'll be really, really fun. KCP as well. He just loves playing his old team. Monday, we've got either, what, Bulls or Miami against Boston. I'd say Boston starts, what, at least a 7.5-point favorite against either of them, and I think Boston will cover that. Dallas Clippers, game one. 1.5-point favorites, the Mavericks on the road against the Clippers. The Clippers won the last 2 playoff series, obviously. They're 2-1 against the Mavs this season. 2-2 in the last 4. I think the Mavs win game one. I think we get a massive Kyrie game. Luka is just doing everything. And the Clippers are like, too many question marks about Kawhi. We don't know what we're doing. In and out of the lineup. A bit too sketchy. Dallas win the game one. And then Indy-Milwaukee, same vibe. Indy win this one, -1.5. On the road in Milwaukee. It's not Algonquin for the good land on Monday at 9 a.m. Dallas Clippers at 5:30, by the way. That is a brutal wake up, but the things we do for, you know, basketball. Indy-Milwaukee, 9 a.m. Indy won this season series 4-1 this year. I think Indy win this game one. I think it'll be closer than you expect because Dame, Middleton, Bobby Portis, Brook Lopez, they're still a formidable team, the Bucks. But I think Indy win this one. They've run rings around them. Halliburton will be just a little bit too good. He'll just carve up Dame. And even if Dame just goes full Dame, I think Indy can probably just outscore Milwaukee. And then we've got either, of course, the Sacramento Kings, or the New Orleans Pelicans in OKC. OKC would probably be, what, 3.5 to 4.5-point favorites against either of those teams, and I would take OKC at home because neither of those teams have been very convincing at all. So just saying. Just bloody saying. All right. There you go. That is the entire set of game ones and all the playoff series previewed for you. Bloody hell. We do a bit for you here on NBA Australia. That's what you do when you have a daily NBA show. It's got to dig in sometimes. All right. But we will be back maybe on Sunday night if we have a bit of time in the studio to tape a quick NBA Australia, wrap up the 8 seed games and, of course, the game ones from that day to set you up for Monday morning. We'll see how we go. I'll let you know on the socials, so keep an eye out. Would be nice to do a Sunday one, wouldn't it? But either way, check out NBA Show across the old, what, socials, Twitter, FaceyIG, all that good stuff. I might do some TikTok shit as well. Go check it out there. NFL Show with myself and Gaz. But of course, get around the AFL Today Show. That is the one that I host. It is fun as hell. All things footy all the time. Check that out on the socials as well. I'm all over it on Twitter. We're on an IG. On Facey, it's the Sports Today Show. Go check that out too. It's really good if you like your AFL gear. That's, well, we've got everything covered for you on that one. That's what we do. All right, check us a rating review on your Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, whatever app you're using on your Android phone, across all those shows as well. Cricket Today Podcast, Football Today Podcast for your soccer, obviously NBA and NFL Australia and AFL Today. Help, come on, just chuck a rate and review it. Just say, oh, these guys are pretty good on you, Jim. Thanks, buddy. Get around NBAAustralia.com/shop. Get your merch. And a big thanks always go to From Ozzo for the intro and outro song. Check out House Hatch, Joshua De Laurentiis, Fascinated, Gold Mines, Ramshackle Army, Iowa, Sex Should I, Green, and Dozers for all the tunes you hear throughout the show. Smash them all on Bandcamp, Triple J and Earth, Facey, Apple Music, Spotify. Remember, NBA Australia supports Australian bands, so should you. All right, that's it. We will probably maybe pop in on Sunday night. But either way, this is NBA Australia saying, look after yourselves, would you, dickheads? Have a great weekend. And Lederhosen now!
Cooking with Bainesy is filmed in front of a live studio audience.
And now it's time for Cooking with Bainesy with your host, Aaron Bangers Baines.
G'day, g'day, g'day. Yes, how are you all? Well, look at us over there. I see you over there again, Cheryl. Yes, we know that you love it. Oh, this is great. Yeah, g'day. Welcome to Cooking with Bainesy. I am your host, Aaron Bangers Bainesy. All right, so this here episode, we're going to whip up one of my absolute favourite Australian staples. You can have it whenever as well, at night, for dinner, after a big night on the Terps. It's that absolute Aussie classic. It is Hawaiian pizza. Oh, yes, that's right. I love me some Hawaiian pizza, and it's easy as to make, mate. I mean, it definitely helps keeping up this physique, if you know what I mean. I reckon I probably cook about three of these bloody things a week, you know what I'm saying? And also, hey, just for yous out there as well, don't bloody listen to anyone who says shit about pineapple on pizza. They can go and do what I tell every centre in the Eastern Conference of the NBA. They can go fuck themselves, all right? You can put whatever the fuck you want on pizza. It's pizza. All right, so anyway, Hawaiian pizza is bloody simple, mate. All you gotta do is go down to your soupy and grab yourself a pizza base. I love the spongier, thick ones, you know. Grab a thing of tomato paste. Now, don't bother with the fancy pants shit with basil or oregano in it unless you want to be like all fancy pants and shit. Because then you just grab a bunch of shredded ham from the deli. Grab a bag of shredded cheese. Now, you can have mozzarella, cheddar, home brand, whatever you want. Doesn't matter. It's just bloody cheese. And the key ingredient, a tin of pineapple chunks. Now, it's pretty easy to whip this bad boy up, so let's get to it. All right, here we go. Now, just whip your base out. There you go. All right, now smother it with the tomato paste. Well, yep, there you go. Smooth her out a bit. Just make sure it's all over the entire thing. Now, dump your ham on there. Yep, all this shredded ham. Now, oh, get your fingers amongst that. Shove that to the edges. There you go. Spread that out nice and even. Yep, there you go. All right, now cover this liberally with the dead pig. Come on, man. You got to put the ham everywhere. Just need heaps and heaps and heaps of ham. Just make sure it's the nice shredded stuff, though. All right, now drain your pineapple into the sink. Or you can drain it into a cup and drink that pineapple juice, you know. What bloke doesn't like a cup of pineapple juice, you know what I'm saying, ladies? There we go. Now, fang the chunks of pineapple on there. Just put it everywhere, you know, just throw it around. And then cover up the entire bloody thing with your shredded cheese. All right. Now, we've got this oven over here. Just wang her in there in the oven. There you go. Just for a good 15, 20 minutes at about 220 degrees Celsius. None of that Fahrenheit bullshit. Now, sit back, grab a tin, and let her cook. Oh, doesn't that bloody well smell delicious? All right, now here's one we made a little bit earlier. So you can see once it's browned a bit on the edges and all your cheese is all melty and nice, you whip her out, you chop her up into slices, and Bob is your bloody pizza-loving uncle. Now, give it a sec to cool down before you chow down. Don't burn your bloody tongue because that cheese will be hot as buggery, eh? So, all right, now it's there. Just get your bloody munch on. And that is an absolute bloody ripper of a meal. The best bit is, and this will impress everyone, right? You can cook it whenever you want. Mates, the missus, kids, everyone bloody loves Hawaiian pizza. And if they don't, just give them the old bangers, don't argue, and go tell them to cook their own bloody pizza. Because this is just bloody delicious, mate. All right, how easy was that? Cool, there you go. That is absolutely unreal. Love me some Hawaiian pizza. All right, so that's it for this week. Tune in next week for a new recipe, and we'll see yous then on the next episode of Cooking with Bainesy.